भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
प्रजापति सुत सम्रान
मनो विख्यात
मंगला
ब्रह्मवर्तम यो अधिवसन षष्ठी सु सप्तानवम महिम प्रजापति सुता सम्रन मनो विख्यात मंगला ब्रह्मवर्तम यो अधिवसन शशि सप्तानुवर्णम महिम प्रजापति सुता the son of Lord Brahma. So these are the qualities of the person that Lord Brahma, excuse me, that the Supreme Lord is describing in answer to the prayers of Kasyapa Muni, Kardama Muni rather. So Prajapati Sutta, the son of Lord Brahma, and then Samrat. Yes, you got it right. Samrat. Emperor. Manu. Swayambhuva Manu. So it is Swayambhuva Manu who is going to come. And he is the son of Lord Brahma. And at this point, when Lord Brahma, as described in the earlier, in the third canto, when Lord Brahma created Swayambhuva Manu and his wife, whose name was Satarupa, then he felt satisfied. And this is, interestingly enough, this is the lead to the description of the killing of Hiranyaksha, because Swayambhuva Manu needed a place to rule, and that place was going to be the earth. And the earth had fallen down into the ocean known as the Garbhadak Ocean. And therefore, Lord Brahma had to pick the earth up from the ocean, and he didn't have any idea what to do, how to do that. But the Lord had promised Lord Brahma, due to his devotion, that there never shall be a time when you are bewildered. So therefore, Lord Brahma placed his mind upon the lotus feet of the Lord and took shelter of him. So this is just there, and just with that simple point as a prelude to what we're going to be discussing today. Because Lord Brahma took shelter of the Supreme Lord, complete shelter. He was Sharanagata. He was one who had returned to the natural position of a soul in relationship to the Supreme Lord. The foundational relationship we have with the Supreme Lord is that we are his. We are his servants, and he is our Lord. And then that relationship can develop, or does develop, into something even more intimate. But that's the basic relationship, that we are Krishna's, because we are his part. When there's the Krishna is not just the Ishwara, not just the controller, he's not God in that sense. But he's more than that. He's the all-inclusive absolute truth, and we are part of him. There's no way that we cannot be part of him. There is no way that we we can't have a relationship with him. We have to have a relationship, and it is who we are. It is natural. It is constitutional. Mama eva angsa jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana. It's eternal. So Brahma took shelter of the Lord, and then the Lord he actually said, "Let the Lord, only the Lord can take care of this big problem." So sometimes we are also faced with big problems, and they're not as big as Lord Brahma's big problem that he had to pick. Raise your hand if tomorrow when you, or the next day when you go back to work, you have to lift the earth up. That's very difficult because you have to be on some platform to lift the earth. Very difficult problem. So, and then Lord Varahadeva appeared, but he did it in such a unique way that Krishna came to save Lord Brahma in such a unique is the best word for it, unimitable way, that he appeared from Lord Brahma's nostril. Now that is wild. Of all places to appear from his nostril, a place where usually dirty things appear from his nostril, because he's there anyway. There's no place where he is not, because one of his characteristics is all-pervading, he's all-pervasive. So there's no place there where he is not, and every place is where he is. So there was no difficulty for him to appear from the nostril of Lord Brahma, and he appeared as a very tiny, insignificant creature. I believe he was the size of a thumb. No, it couldn't be a thumb.
It says tip of a thumb.
Tip of a thumb, yes. So the tip of his thumb, and then he grew in size because he's inconceivable after all, and then eventually he did rescue the earth, and in rescuing the earth, he killed the demon Hiranyaksha. And why did he have to kill the demon Hiranyaksha? Because the demon was a demon. Because what does it mean to be a demon? It means he attacked the Lord, naturally enemies, just like eagles are the natural enemy of snakes. Did anyone ever see an eagle and a snake dancing together or something like that? No, they're just enemies. As soon as an eagle sees a snake, like a mongoose also. How do you say mongoose in Hindi? Billi is something else, right? Bilu. No, that's something different too. Bilu. What is bilu? That's what they call them. No one knows. This is my own version of Hindi, so no one understands what it is. Okay. I can also speak Sanskrit like that too. But immediately, as soon as anyway, we're getting a little off the subject here, but mongooses, they're empowered to kill cobras. And they're fast, and the cobras are they're deadly. But the mongoose is so fast that he appears to be going this way, and suddenly he grabs him by the neck and kills him. So demons similarly have a that's what it means, actually, asura. They have a natural enmity with the Supreme Lord. And asuras, there are many people today who are asuras. Actually, they have a purpose of their life is to challenge the existence of the Supreme Lord. There are many people like that on the scientific level or on ordinary level too. They have an enmity, and actually, if one wants to look at it technically, that every living entity in this world, there is an inherent in the core of their hearts, there is an enmity with the Supreme Lord, causing them, Krishna Bhule Se Jeev, cause them to turn their back. Anadhya Bahimu. There is a deep fault within the heart of every conditioned soul, as good as the goodest may appear, but there is a deep fault of enmity with the Supreme Lord, and therefore, quoting the Bhagavad Gita, Dwa ima purusha loke chara akshara eva cha. Prabhupada would say, we immediately see, is this person, there's only two categories. There is devotee, and then there is demon. Only two categories. So, where do we fit in? Somewhere maybe. I know about myself anyway, which side that I'm on. It's the wrong side. But we're working on it. We're moving. We're aspiring to be devotees. We're aspiring to serve devotees. And that is actually the key in becoming a devotee, is serving devotees, those who are exalted in their devotion, who have actually crossed the line and have said they're a Sharanagata there. They have made that internal commitment, Krishna, I am yours. I am yours. And that's every day, not only on good days. They've made that commitment that I'm yours and you can do whatever you want with me. Swaga pavaka narakeshu apitulyata darshana. This is, who speaks that verse? Huh? To who? He's explaining that the devotees are actually so exceptional because for them, whether they're in swaga, heaven, liberated, or narak, hell, they don't care. Because always, always they are with Krishna consciously, Krishna conscious. And when they're with Krishna, everything else is external and superficial because this is the depth of a devotee's consciousness, an actual devotee's consciousness. They are Krishnas. And because they are Krishnas, Krishna is theirs. Krishna is always the property of the living entity in one sense. But turning our back on Krishna, even though he's helping us, is Ishvara Sava Bhutanam, he's in everyone's heart, Savasya Chaham, Riddhi Sanavisto. And he's giving us so much, providing so much, but we've turned our back and we don't see him as conditioned souls. So sadhana bhakti means the process of turning to Krishna from bahyamukh to samukh. Srila Jiva Goswami describes this is the actual purpose of sadhana. It is to turn to Krishna, means turn to our relationship, be alive in our relationship with Krishna instead of turning our back to Krishna. And our relationship to Krishna is one of being his servant. So Swayambhu Vimanu appeared at a very, and that also is early in the canto, turns into after Varaha saves the earth and kills Hiranyaksha, then who's hearing at that point? Maitreya Muni is speaking to Vidur. Till the end of the fourth canto, Maitreya Muni is speaking to Vidur. So at that point, Vidura asks about why did Hiranyaksha, what is this enmity? What about that? And then who is this Hiranyaksha who was so powerful he could actually fight with the Lord? So then it turns into the four Kumaras going to Vaikuntha, and then we move right in after the four Kumaras go to Vaikuntha, which is one of the most exceptional pastimes in the Bhagavatam. Raise your hand if you've read that one carefully. Of course, no one's going to say that they're masters of that pastime, but it's engaging in every way and very, very, very sweet. Very sweet, because the four Kumaras have a conversion experience. They were basically impersonalists before, not Mayavadis, but impersonalists. And then getting the fragrance of the Tulsi of the Lord, carried by a breeze on the Lord's feet, reached their nostrils, and then just by that, their hearts were changed, and their hearts were melted, and they became devotees. So, here, yes, back to the verse. So that's about the birth of Swayambhuva Manu. Then, and he was the emperor. And then Vikyata,
well known.
Mangala,
whose righteous acts.
So his righteous acts were well known because he was empowered to rule the world. Because, and I've heard Prabhupada say this as well, that one cannot be the ruler or the emperor of the world unless one is a Mahabhagavata, which means that unless one is empowered by the Lord to do it. Otherwise, there's always opposition. Whatever, and we see this in the world and the world's politics. One person, one country tries to expand theirs and control everything. Then other countries, they group together and they become strong. They have their time to go up, and this one has their time to go up, and then has the time to go down, and this one comes. This is the very nature of the material world. No one can control this place except for Krishna through his energies, such as Durga and Maya. They're the real rulers of this world. No one else can rule this world. So unless Krishna empowers someone, no one can actually control. It is actually Krishna's controlling power that gives one the ability to control. So no one ever has whatever, and everyone has some ability to control, just like children have the ability to control their parents. Some of them. That's due to love, actually. But that's Krishna's potency, enter into someone. So no one, whoever, whatever ability to control they have or to do anything, practically speaking, no one should become proud of that, because in one moment, because there are different ways that we control. We control by the six opulences that Krishna has, Sadaishwarya Purnam, he has them in full. We control by possessing a little bit of those opulences, the intelligence or beauty or renunciation or fame. If someone very, very famous walks in, we serve them, we do so many things. And by serving, interesting, when we serve people like that, when someone very wealthy or famous comes in, we're using service generally as a way to control them, to extract something from them. It's not, but that's it doesn't work as effectively as true affection, true love, and the same with Krishna. Especially with Krishna, because how can we influence Krishna unless he decides to place, unless there's such depth of trust that he decides to place himself under our control, yes. Unless we actually love him deeply. And as soon as one actually loves Krishna completely, fully, then Krishna actually becomes controlled, and therefore he's called Bhakta Vatsala. He's actually, this is his pleasure, placing himself under the control of his devotees. And that's how to understand Braja. That there is Ekala Ishwara Krishna, there is one controller, there is one enjoyer, and that is Krishna. And everyone else, there are countless, unlimited other living entities there. And all of them just love Krishna. And they're thinking continuously every day with the highest bhakti, with the fullest love and affection and attachment, what will be pleasing to Krishna. Regardless of what they're doing, the example given in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi 4 is when the gopis are looking in the mirror and decorating themselves, trying to make themselves beautiful. No matter what they're doing, there is no vanity in it. There is nothing other than the desire to please and serve Krishna in it. So the externals aren't exactly important. But they are important because they're all external manifestations of what's internally within them, which is love for Krishna. And in the material world, it's just the opposite. No matter in the spiritual world, no matter what one is doing, what it appears like, love for Krishna is its essence, is its center. And in this, in the material world, no matter what it appears to, what it externally appears like, selfishness is in the center. There's always selfish motivation in every so-called selfless act in the material world. Unless one is free from ahankara, vimudatma, free from false ego, fear from pride, free from material, all the material coverings that really cover the soul, so that the soul, the true nature of the soul, doesn't manifest. So this person, Manu, who was the ruler, the samrat, the ruler of the universe, he is going to come. Brahmavartam. Brahmavarta. So he's well known because he's Mangalam, he's righteous. Did we say Mangalam? We went through that, yes. And then he's the righteous, the auspicious, righteous by good acts. It's interesting how Prabhupada, in his One by Words, he translates Mangala as righteous acts, activities. And usually we translate Mangala as auspicious. So it's righteous, good, pious activities that are actually auspicious for the living entity. So his pious activities are well known. Ya,
ya.
He who.
Arivasan,
living in.
Shashti,
rules.
Sapta,
seven.
Anavam,
oceans.
Mahim,
the earth. So here's Srila Prabhupada's translation. The emperor Swayambhuva Manu, the son of Lord Brahma, who is well known for his righteous acts, has his seat in Brahmavarta and rules over the earth with its seven oceans. Please repeat. The emperor. You have to wait till I say it before you can repeat it. By definition. The emperor. Swayambhuva Manu. The son of Lord Brahma. Who is well known for his righteous acts, has his seat in Brahmavarta and rules over the earth with its seven oceans. Now here's Srila Prabhupada's purport, and I will now tell you in advance there's going to be an examination at the end of the purport. When I read the purport, an examination is, and I'll tell you the question. Are you going to take notes about what the purport is, and then you'll be able to answer all the questions? Question is very simple. What do you remember? That's the first part of it. But and usually it's the last line. but we'll make it a little more interesting. What's, if anything, struck you as significant for you personally? Okay, ready? You ready, Shyamasunda? Okay, you're going to read along too. Okay. Juha, you can also read along, if you like. Sometimes it is stated that Brahmavarta is a part of Kurukshetra, or that Kurukshetra itself is situated in Brahmavarta, because the demigods are recommended to perform spiritual ritualistic performances in Kurukshetra. But in others' opinion, Brahmavarta is a place in Brahmaloka, where Swayambhuva ruled. There are many places on the surface of this earth which are also known in the higher planetary systems. We have places on this earth like Vrindavan, Dwarka, Mathura, but they are also eternally situated in Krishna Loka. There are many similar names on the surface of the earth, and it may be that in the Boer age, Swayambhuva Manu ruled this planet as stated here. The word Mangala is significant. Mangala means one who is elevated in every respect in the opulence of religious performances, ruling power, cleanliness, and all other good qualities. Vikyata means celebrated, and Swayabhuva Manu was celebrated for all good qualities and opulences. Okay, raise your hand. Who has something that struck them? Okay, we'll make it easier. Who remembers something? Okay. You should know that we're videoing this. And all those who don't raise their hands, don't get Mahaprasadam. Anirudha Prabhu. But all those who do raise their hands get.
There's a couple of things, but.
This one.
It's interesting that different authorities have different opinions about where locations are situated in the description of the Brahmanism.
Yes, very, very, very interesting.
So it's. It leaves a fair bit of flexibility.
Yes.
In understanding things.
Yes, very, very, very interesting point. Very interesting point. And I'll speak a little bit more about that point in a few moments. But anyone else had something that struck them? Did you also? Now that is also very intriguing. How could something be in the material world and the spiritual world? How could something be both in the material world and the spiritual world? And to make it more interesting, when we go there, we go to Vrindavan, we go to Mayapur, are we in the material world or in the spiritual world? There's a lot of giggling in the back. I wonder if and usually, because what tirtha means, actually, it means, there's a technical word for it, a technical English word, that it's called liminal space. Liminal space means, in Hindi, you could say it, wo bhi hai, wo bhi nahi hai. It is not this and it's not that. It's somewhere, it's like the example that's often given is like the doorway. So when people stand in the doorway, they're not in the temple, but they're not out of the temple. Therefore, it's confusing for the people trying to get in the temple or people trying to get out of the temple. So we don't recommend people standing in the doorway. But it's in between. So tirtha actually means this place of liminal space that's the spiritual world and the material world. It's in between. And a place like Vrindavan is so spiritually potent that you can feel the betweenness, even if your consciousness isn't on the spiritual level. There's something so powerful. There's something so powerful about the proximity of the spiritual realm that you perceive it. Like if you were standing in the doorway of the temple, I guess that's why people stand in the doorway, because when they're going out, especially, is because they don't, something in them makes it, they don't want to really leave the atmosphere in Radhabalava, Sisi, Gornitai, and Jagannath Baladev Subhadra's realm over here. Because it's not ordinary here. And it's not ordinary in Sri Vrindavan Dham. It's extraordinary. And Srila Prabhupada actually said, even if a non-devotee goes to Vrindavan, they will feel separation from Krishna. Yes, so very, very interesting point. Anyone else had it? Someone else did have a point that from the Pope. Now it was so long ago, no one ever, if we can ask what book we were reading. Okay, who remembers something from the poem? Yes?
The qualities of a ruler.
Yes, what were those? The word Mangala is significant. Mangala means one who is elevated in every respect in the opulence of religious performances. Is that the part you meant? Ruling power, cleanliness, and all other good qualities. And Vikyata means celebrated. Swayam Bhuvamana was celebrated for all good qualities and opulences. So what's happening here in this verse, Lord Brahma the Supreme Lord is introducing Kardama Muni's wife to be to Kardama Muni because he's made this arrangement. So he first introduces his wife-to-be, whose name is Devahuti, by introducing the father. Because she is in this dynasty. She is this type of a qualified person. She is so qualified that she is the daughter of Swayam Bhuvamanu, who's celebrated as not only the ruler, but he's celebrated for his good, auspicious, godly qualities. So naturally, with an introduction like that, it's going to be clear, and the verses later will show it, that Devahuti has such wonderful qualities. As her father was so auspicious, Mangala, and possessing of such good qualities, so the daughter will also possess these qualities. Thank you. Does anyone remember anything else from the purport, or anything strike them? Yes.
It's interesting to see that in a world where there are so many ideologies.
So many ideologies, did you say? Yes.
Even ruling a particular state or even a nation is so difficult. And Swayam Bhuvamanu.
Even a family, it's difficult to rule a family. What to speak of a state, because it's the state of confusion. Yes.
So it's interesting to see that only a Mahajana can keep everyone happy. So he celebrated, which means everyone will be very happy under the
moon. Everyone was happy. Because he's empowered. That means Krishna wants him to do it. There's no false ego involved. And this we see with the kings of old, is that it's not false ego that's causing them to hold on to power. And therefore, near the end of their life, or at some time soon as there is a qualified ruler under them, they immediately leave power and they go to the forest and perform austerities. And why do they go to the forest and perform austerities after ruling? Yes. Yeah, we see this with Priyavrata. Priyavrata, he did it the opposite way. It's such an interesting pastime in the first chapter of which canto? Fifth canto. He was a renunciant. Completely renounced. He did not want to rule. He did not want the position of power. But he was the most qualified person to rule. So Swayam Bhuvamanu at that time came with Lord Brahma. They came with power and force and said, please, the authority, these two authorities came, father and grandfather and great-grandfather came and said, you please take up the rule. You have to renounce renunciation to serve Krishna, to please Krishna. And this is the nature of a devotee. They'll do anything to please Krishna because Krishna is the center of their existence. They have such depth of love for Krishna, they'll do anything to please Krishna. And therefore, when someone has that mentality, Krishna becomes controlled by them. He is not an autocratic dictator. And people have that fear of God. But he's not like that at all. He becomes controlled by his devotees. Atma Pajanta Vadanyata. He becomes controlled by his devotees. And he'll dance when they offer him, as it is well known from the 11th chapter of the 10th canto, that he dances for sweetmeats when the older gopis, they say to him, Krishna, if you dance, we'll give you a sweetmeat. And he, in India you see this, I've never seen anywhere else, but the young children sometimes in a crude way, you know, they'll get up and dance, but it's so charming. It's not like the polished dancing of an expert Bharatanatyam performer, but it's just so cute. They just dance in this way, and they move the hands, and or when the children sometimes will speak some philosophy or something. It's charming, and all the gopis would get around Krishna. They would clap their hands and encourage him with the dancing and things like that. He would dance for half of a sweetmeat. I mean, Radha Balava gets so much more than that every day. But this is just to show how Krishna becomes enchanted by the devotees who are enchanted by him. And this defines that holy place of Vrindavan. And therefore, when we get to that Tirtha element, we're there in the spiritual world, but with somewhat material consciousness, and we don't perceive the whole thing. But yet, it is so sweet. It is the sweetness that everyone in their heart of hearts is actually longing for. Their relationship with Krishna blossomed to the degree that it is the relationship of everyone in Vrindavan's relationship with Krishna has blossomed. And it is so attractive. It is so appealing. And Mahaprabhu in Sridhar Mayapur, by the process of the chanting of the holy names, by the process of the kirtan of the holy names, he causes, when one goes deeply into that realm, one experiences Vrindavan also. This is the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In Vrindavan, one needs extreme qualifications. When we examine the lives of the Goswamis, they were such renunciants. They did not care for they were living, they were in that world actually, although they were seemingly in this world, they were living in that world, teaching us how to long for that world. And Srila Prabhupada used to chant, and if you look at the recordings that he made, so many of them are that. Krishna kirtana ganana tanaparo premam ritam boni. They were tasting prema amrita. And they were teaching us how to taste it. They were well placed in society. They were very wealthy person. Many of them, or most of them, they were very wealthy, from Raghunath Das Goswami and Sri Rupa and Sri Sanatana. And they were so well placed in society, and they gave it up. Tuchavat, insignificant. I don't want to touch that. And the only way one can think of the elements of the material world, the attractive elements of the material world, as insignificant, is if one is tasting something far, far, far superior. Far superior. So the Goswamis taught that path. And Mahaprabhu, although very, very, very strict, he gave us something that everyone can practice, regardless of the qualification, and practice together. And that is the kirtan of the holy names. And in that kirtan, the bliss of Vaikuntha can be experienced. And therefore, it is pouring water on, or nectar even on the parched consciousness of the souls of Kali Yuga, such a relief. And therefore, we want to add more and more of the holy names of these Surup Siddha items of bhakti, these items of bhakti that are inherently have the potency of Krishna. We want to add more and more to our life of that. And that's the facility of living in the temple. That's the facility that the temple offers more and more. More and more. There's no other business at the temple other than glorifying Krishna in one form or another. Glorifying Radha-Balava and distributing the glories of Radha-Balava by the mercy of Gaur Nithai and Jagannath Baladev and Subhadra. Okay, now raise your hand if you still, after almost a half hour, remember anything from the purport. Manda Samanda Mateo, accursed in Kali. No, but everyone I know that you remember, but just being very humble. Raise your hand if you remember something from the purport that struck you. Yes?
The demigods are recommended to do spiritual ritualistic performance.
Say again?
Demigods are recommended to do...
Recommended. Demigods are recommended? Okay, let me just get that one because I could not... Maybe I don't remember it exactly correctly. Because the demigods are recommended to perform spiritual ritualistic performances in Kurukshetra. Yes, when they're performing... ritualistic performances, sacrifices according to the Vedas, it's always recommended to do this in a holy place such as Kurukshetra. So what is interesting about that is Prabhupada says to perform not just ritualistic performances, but spiritual ritualistic performances. Now what is, which is it? Because sometimes we look at ritualistic performances as just ritualistic. I mean, they don't have depth. That's the implication. But spiritual ritualistic performances should be done at Kurukshetra. Could anyone shed some light on that? Why is the Prabhupada put the word spiritual in there? Yes, please. Yes, exactly. That all the Vedic ritualistic performances, I heard, interesting enough for me, I heard Prabhupada just speak about this maybe today or yesterday in one of his lectures, that it's all meant to please Krishna. Perhaps in a gradual way, but it's all meant to get the consciousness correct, to remove the rajas and tamas, the passionate ignorance from the consciousness, and elevate the conditioned soul to the platform of goodness, and then beyond goodness, with the addition of transcendental knowledge, with the addition of detachment from the realm of matter, and then giving, so that bhakti, so devotion to Krishna, can develop in the consciousness. Vedis cha savar aham eva vidyo. It is all meant to know Krishna, but not just to know Krishna, but to develop love for Krishna, prema, pramarto mahan. And not just develop love for Krishna, but that's the end, really, of course, but to live with Krishna eternally. Thank you. Anyone remember anything else from Prabhupada's purport? Well, let's see if we can just find. But Krishna's blessed you with such a good memory. How nice. Anyone remember anything else? Yes, you raised your hand. You did, I saw it. You making believe you're going to scratch your head. Yes, what do you remember from the purport? the importance of Kurukshetra. For the Krishna consciousness movement, who can name two very important things that occurred that have their origins in Kurukshetra? Raise your hand if you can name one. Raise your hand a little higher, otherwise poor Bharatan can't. Yes?
Krishna spoke the Bhagavad Gita.
Yes, very good, in Kurukshetra. Do you know that there are... I've recently been to Kurukshetra. That battlefield was 50 kilometers on each side of Kurukshetra, 100 kilometers, filled with people who were killing each other. Have you been to Kurukshetra? Why? You? It's really, and there's this museum, this panoramic museum that depicts all the different days, and then when you, at least when I saw it with Jagatrini and Lita, that to actually see all the killing that was going on, even though it was in dioramas, they weren't like killing people there, but it was shocking. There were arms and legs and heads everywhere and arrows killing me. It was really serious. And Krishna chose that place to speak transcendental knowledge, to tell people that they weren't their bodies, to tell people that we go through so many lives, to tell people that the real purpose of our existence is to give ourselves to Krishna. He chose the battlefield of Kurukshetra and that tree. There's a tree there where under which he said that Krishna spoke the battle of the Bhagavad Gita. Well, on the chariot. Yes, that's one. What's the second one that's very, very important that has its root in Kurukshetra? Raise your hand if you know. Yes? I just want to see how many people will put this one together. That's 1, 2, 3. Raise your hand so you can see. Oh, so it's getting more and more people. It's like grass sprouting in the spring. Yes, and what is that? Rathyatra. Not me. Rathyatra. Yes, Rathyatra. Because there, and there's one place called Sannihit Sarov, where Krishna met the Braja Gopikas. Very, very interesting pastimes there. And it's described in the Bhagavatam. Anyone know what chapter in the 10th canto is meeting between Krishna and the residents of Vrindavan and Kurukshetra? Anyone, raise your hand if you know. Yes. What chapter? Okay. What chapter? Anyone know? I'll give you a hint. Pay close attention, you two. It's between 81 and 83. Yes, Gopal. Yeah, oh, very good. That chapter describes something very, very, very wonderful. That, and of course, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the Rathyatra is described. Raise your hand if you've ever been to the Rathyatra in Melbourne. Oh, okay, very good. In Jagannath Puri. So many. But there, Mahaprabhu gave the meaning, the deepest meaning of this Rathyatra, of bringing Krishna back to Vrindavan. And if you read this, I think it's in the 13th chapter of Madhya Lila of Chaitanya Charitamrita. And if you read this chapter, you will understand the heart of Srimati Radharani. Mahaprabhu reveals that. So it's such a deep, deep, deep chapter. Of course, understanding is one thing, but it's so deep. So deep, and it's unlimitedly deep. But there, in quoting, so what happened was in the Who knows what happens right before that in the 10th canto? There are two chapters before it. Gopal, what's two chapters before chapter 82? Oh, huh? 80-81, very good, yes. And in those, Sudama Brahman. Past, wonderful pastime of Sudama Brahman. And then right after that, it's Kurukshetra, where Krishna comes to Kurukshetra after on the occasion of a solar eclipse. So I'm not sure we should speak about this now because there's not much time left. But should we? Or not? Or should we have more?
Yeah.
Are you sure? Okay. Dhruv? Okay. Gopal's giving me two thumbs up. Wow.
Well,
Krishna came, and
the resonance of Vrindavan came.
There are many, 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 many interesting points about in this chapter, and more than interesting, unlimitedly deep. But when Krishna came to Kurukshetra, they were staying, and the resonance of Vrindavan, knowing that Krishna was coming, and they hadn't seen him in years. And for those who
love Krishna,
even a moment's separation, nimeshina, even the blinking of the eye is almost intolerable. So the residents of Vrindavan who were on that level of love for Krishna, they had traveled to Kurukshetra from Vrindavan, which is, if you drove, it's not that far now. It's only maybe 4 hours or 4.5 hours. So it's far, but not that far. But they went by bullock cart to see Krishna. And they set up their camp, the residents of Vrindavan, in tents. And Mother Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj, Nanda Baba, they were in one tent, and Krishna was there. And Rohini Devi, who had been to Vrindavan, there were only two persons in Dwarka who had, or three, two persons in Dwarka, in the Dwarka Leela, who had witnessed directly the Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan, and that was Rohini Devi and Balaram. And Uddhava came later. Krishna sent Uddhava for wonderful reasons to see the love of the residents of Vrindavan and to witness this. But Rohini Devi and Devaki, they wanted to bring Krishna and Balaram to the tent of Nanda and Yashoda, where they were staying. So Nanda and Yashoda were there, and they walked in, and they hadn't seen Krishna for so long. And Krishna and Balaram hadn't seen them for so long. So it's always relationship means between two. It's not just we have to learn to love Krishna, but Krishna also is there in the relationship, and he has ye tamam prapadyante. So Rohini Devi and Devaki walk in with Krishna and Balaram, and Nanda and Yashoda are sitting there. And Yashoda Devi had, practically speaking, she had not eaten or cleaned the house or anything since Krishna left. And she just lamented and lamented and lamented, and in that she was experiencing Krishna. So when Devaki and Rohini brought in Krishna and Balaram, immediately Krishna and Balaram ran onto the laps, even though they were old already. Krishna was a king and had so many wives, and but immediately jumped onto the laps of Nanda and Yashoda. And just, and Nanda and Yashoda and Krishna Balaram were so ecstatic. So ecstatic. And Krishna Balaram was so ecstatic. And, not, and they just, and seeing that, this is as according to the description of Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti, seeing this ecstasy of the love between Krishna and Balaram and Nanda and Yashoda, then at that time, Devaki began to feel somewhat, what's the word? Not minimized, but insecure, yes. But of course, this is all on the transcendental level, and that's a mundane world word. But she began to feel that, uh-oh, look at this love. So she said, and there's the verses there in the 82nd chapter. Unfortunately, I don't know the Sanskrit. She said, it is so wonderful that you love, the love that you show Krishna and Balaram, my children, is so wonderful, even though you are not even their real mother and father. So you have to understand the crooked way that people, you already know that, you're all... the indirect way that people, that she was talking, she wanted to make the point, you're not their mother and father, actually. I am their mother. But she was saying it in a very indirect way, subtle way, that even though you're not their mother and father, it is so wonderful that you show them so much affection. Get it? And how did Mother Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj and Krishna Balaram react to that? Did they feel the pinch of the words? And the answer that Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur gives is no. They didn't experience the pinch of the words because they didn't even hear the words. They were just so much absorbed in this Shuddha Vatsalya Prem, this love for that was going on. They were overflowing. It was like a tidal wave of love, of affection being exchanged. And they didn't hear anything. They did not move. They did not hear. They did not react. And then Mohini Devi, seeing the awkwardness of the situation, she said to Devaki, let us go talk to the other queens of Krishna and the other residents. Let's go outside and talk for a while. And they went outside. So this is very, very unique. Actually, the Krishna consciousness movement is very, very, very unique. It's very unique. It's unlimitedly deep, and our capacity to taste the depth of what we could say Prabhupada was giving us, we could say what Srila Prabhupada's Guru Maharaj wanted to give us, what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to give us, what Nityananda Prabhu wanted to give us, what Jagannath Baladev wanted to give us, what Radha Balava have come here to give us, what Srimad Bhagavatam has in its depths. We can taste it according to our capacity. We want to go use our life properly, to keep focused on the service of Krishna. Okay, we'll end here, and we have exactly, depending upon whose watch we're using, we have 1 minute's worth of questions. So we'll only be able to have binary responses. Okay, anyone have a binary question? Yes. Yes. And that's Rathiyatra. So we celebrate both of them. Yes.
But these in the first chapter,
Is there anyone here from Kurukshetra? Or Kuruketra, if you're pronouncing it in a bungalow way. Anyone here from there? It was such an auspicious place that the devatas, the demigods, were asked to perform their rituals there because it's an auspicious place. So there's a long history of Kurukshetra before the war, a long, long history of Kurukshetra that I don't remember. I don't have a good memory, unfortunately. But it's very auspicious. It's always been auspicious. And therefore, it is called Dharmakshetra. And Dhritarashtra was so unfortunate in one sense. Of course, we can look at it as Krishna's Leela too. But from the sense of Dhritarashtra was so afraid of the positive influence of Dharma on the outcome of the war. So that means he would have preferred to have the battle in New York or something like that. Where the negative influence and Kali's influence or something would have been stronger. Because and Duryodhana was a partial incarnation of Kali himself. Made, empowered, just like Prabhupada was empowered, Krishna Shakti Nahivina Tara Pravartana, to preach. He was empowered by Kali, Duryodhana, to cause trouble and strife in the world. So I don't think I answered your question very well, but it is true, and there's whole histories there that have been said, and it's been, and that Brahma Sarova, that's there where they went to bathe, that famous. And also it is said that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that Mahaprabhu visited Kurukshetra, Nityananda Prabhu visited Kurukshetra. And when we visited, we went on Gita Jayanti Day, and the devotees there, they're building a really wonderful temple with big wheels. The temple will be in the shape of a chariot, and the wheels will be moving. Yes, and so we did a sacrifice, a homa, where we made an offering for every verse of the Bhagavad Gita. And then after that, we went under the tree where the Bhagavad Gita was spoken, and we read the whole thing, the whole Bhagavad Gita in English again, so we can understand more easily. We read it again. It was very, very powerful. And there were so many people there just reading Bhagavad Gita. Okay. Any one last question? If there is one last question. You have a last question. Yes.
Why don't we perceive the Manu's influence, because when he was there, everything was peaceful. So why don't we feel it in this age? This is Manu ruling.
If Manu was ruling now?
Yes.
But he's not ruling now. Is he? As far as I know, it's like the bankers or someone who's trying to rule the world, something like that. It's Kali is ruling. But not, yeah, there must be a Manu, yes, good point. But he's certainly not, he's not ruling. This is Kali Yuga. My dear son, this is Kali Yuga. This is Kali Yuga. Kali's in charge. But it's an interesting technical question. And just going back to what Aniruddha Prabhu said right in the beginning, that Prabhupada brought up dual authorities in this. He said sometimes it is said that Brahmavarta is part of Kurukshetra, or that Kurukshetra itself is situated in Brahmavarta, because the demigods are recommended to perform spiritual ritualistic performances in Kurukshetra. But others' opinion is that Brahmavarta is a place in Brahmaloka where Swayambhuva Manu ruled. So we can gather from that that when the authorities don't exactly say the same thing, and especially when Prabhupada brings it up, that it's not an essential point for our going back to the spiritual world and awakening our relationship with Krishna. It's not an essential point. So sometimes we'll get so much into a detail that, and our mind can get so absorbed in a detail that we'll forget really what the essential points actually are. So it's not that the details aren't important, but sometimes different authorities say different things. But in the search for a detail, we shouldn't forget the essence and what the essence is. Okay, we'll end then. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Sisi Gonatai ki jai, Sisi Radhavallabhai ki jai, Sisi Jagannath Baladev, Subhadra Devi ki jai, Srila Prabhupada Bhaktivinoda ki jai.